Good evening. I'm sitting in my basement. It's getting kind of cold down here, and it's almost midnight. I have been thinking about what my next episode should be on for just a couple of weeks, actually, and I have decided to get away from some of the missing persons cases that I've been discussing lately and refocus my energy on a true death mystery. This is a case from 2008. It happened on a road that I know very, very well. And there's actually a pattern here. There's three other homicides that have occurred over the last 25 years, all of them eerily similar. And this will be the first installment in a series of four episodes about these murders. So hang on and get ready for a good in-depth discussion tonight. Oh, turn off the lights and put your thinking cap on. Tonight we are going to talk about David Edwin Lewis. He was found in his burned-out house up on Dead Indian Memorial Road on September 4th of 2008. And actually, he was found on September 5th, but the murder occurred on September 4th because the firefighters didn't find his body until they were clearing the rubble the next day. One of the curious things about this case is that there was another murder in Medford on September 4th of 2008. A man named Troy Dean Carney was sleeping in his sleeping bag in the Greenway area near Table Rock Road over by the Central Point Freeway interchange. And he was homeless at the time, and there's no known connection between Troy Dean Carney and David Edwin Lewis, but they were both shot in the head on the same day. Very close to each other. Dead Indian Memorial Road is actually outside of Ashland. And I think this would just be a coincidence, but there are a few other murders that we're going to talk about in a later episode that are very curiously similar to that of David Lewis's murder, in that people were shot and then burned up in their house in the Medford area. So I'm going to give you guys a little bit of background about David Lewis. He was actually from Delaware originally, and he came all the way across the United States and decided that he loved Ashland, that he wanted to live here. And David was known for being an avid fisherman. He loved the outdoors. He loved living the mountain man lifestyle. And he met his wife out here, Josie Fournier. Yeah, I can't say that. And they raised their three sons in the Ashland area, living in the very house where he would eventually be murdered and burned up in. A little bit more about David is that he was said to be very outspoken, and he was actually renting the property, and he had rented the property along with his wife and his three sons for the better part of 25 years, maybe a little bit longer than that. So he was a longtime resident living in this remote cabin up on Dead Indian Memorial Road. And if you're from this area, or if you're not, Dead Indian Memorial Road is one of my favorite roads because it leads up into the mountains into an area that I like to go mushroom hunting. It is stunning up there. There are very few homes up there. There are some vacation rentals and that kind of thing. And curiously about this case is that another house was actually burned up on the same night that David Lewis was murdered on the same road up on Dead Indian Memorial. But in that fire, there was nobody there. It was actually a vacation rental that nobody was living in. So that's another weird connection. A little bit more about David is that he was said to have gotten along with everybody. There are no known business dealings. The police could not find any connection to a falling out with a neighbor. They really did a lot of investigative work to try to discover a motive as to who might have wanted David dead. David also was known for collecting metal scrap, and he would make artwork out of, you know, chainsaw chains. He would make artwork out of old metal drums. He would make artwork out of anything and everything that he could find. He was sort of a scrap recycler who could see things that were discarded and see the beauty in them, and he would use them to make sculptures. And he absolutely loved nature, and he collected rocks and worked with leather and basically did all kinds of cool mountain man craft type stuff. He sounds like a guy that I would like to know. Sounds like a lot of my friends growing up, actually. And you know who I'm talking about if you're listening. It might be you. David actually volunteered to be a wildland firefighter in the area. So he was a very giving person, and he was known to basically look after people, and he was very friendly, and he was also very outspoken. I believe his sister said it would not be something for David to basically tell you how it is. He was not somebody that was going to pull any punches. He was kind of a larger-than-life character, and those type of people, you either love them or you hate them. And a lot of homicides, most homicides, I think something like 55% of them are committed by somebody that is either a friend or a family member of the victim. And only about 25% of homicides are committed by strangers. And then I think another, you know, like 20% are committed by acquaintances or, you know, neighbors or people that you barely know. So there's a better than 50-50 chance that David knew his attacker, according to the statistics. But what I'm going to say here is that this feels to me more like a stranger murder, just because it seemed very cold and callous, and this may have been a robbery. Of course, David did live up a very long driveway, and I live up a very long driveway out in the woods, and anybody coming up my road, I would want to know who they are. Whenever I have a stranger come up my road, and you can't see my house from the road, from the main road, I can hear, you know, somebody driving up my driveway. I know that I would be very on guard, especially in the middle of the night, if somebody were to drive up to my house. I would think, what is going on? So is this a stranger homicide? Did somebody sneak up on David? Or was this somebody he knew? Was this a neighbor? Was this a family member? Was this a business partner? Was this a friend, a drinking buddy? There's a lot of possibilities, but we do know that the police spent a lot of time. The Jackson County Sheriff's Department spent a lot of time running down leads in this case, and they're still working it actively, but it is a cold case. So are they working it actively? Well, I know that these cold cases, there are numerous in Jackson County. They aren't just filed away and ignored, but they probably aren't worked every day. I do know, like, we watch on TV and we see these cold case units, and there are men and women in law enforcement that really dedicate a lot of time and a lot of effort and energy, and they never fully put a case on the back burner. They've always got an iron in the fire, they're always working an angle, and they're just hoping that something is going to click and they'll be able to connect the murderer to their misdeed, to their horrific crime. And I hope that happens in David's case. He seems like he would have been a really cool guy to get to know. So back to the night of the murder, I'm going to go over the timeline. Firefighters were called sometime after midnight to a structure fire up near Green Springs near Keno Access Road. And I know Keno Access Road. I love that road. It's a cool dirt road that traverses actually all the way into California eventually. It's on National Forest Service land. It is very remote. There are cabins up there. And I will be going up there very soon to do some mushroom hunting. And I'm going to go see if I can locate the spot where this cabin was. And I'm also going to see if I can locate the spot where David's home was on my way up there. So firefighters went out. They put out this initial blaze that was an uninhabited vacation home. And when they were coming back down the hill towards Ashland, a 911 phone call started coming in about another fire. So, whoa, two fires, same night. It's now about 4 a.m. and they come upon David's home and they see flames. It had been going on for quite a while and the structure was a total loss. Basically, the only thing that was left was a chimney by the time the firefighters got there. So it was hot, it was intense, and it was left to burn probably for hours before it was noticed and called in on 911. So we have to ask ourselves, are these two fires connected? Apart from them being set within a couple of hours of each other in the middle of the night on the same day on the same remote road, 5 miles apart, are they connected? Was there a burglar slash robber in the area that actually hit two residences and then murdered a man and then went to the other residence or vice versa and saw fit to burn down both places after he stole some items? Is that one scenario? Could it possibly be that somebody murdered David and then went up to the other place and set it on fire to kind of throw the investigators off? And, basically put them on a wild goose chase. Or could it be that these two fires were not related? These are all possibilities, and we may never know. So another thing I uncovered while doing research on this case, I noticed that David had actually gone through a divorce with Josie a few years before the fire and murder, actually 8 years. 9 years before the, it was in 1999. Let's do some math here. And after and during the divorce, David was actually convicted of, he was convicted of assault against his wife and ex-wife a couple of times. And he was also convicted of harassment and maybe some stalking allegations. So we don't like to talk bad about victims of crimes, but these are important details when discussing motives and discussing somebody's temperament. And if he is capable of assaulting his ex-wife, he is capable of possibly getting into trouble with other people. Maybe he had a temper. Maybe he pissed off somebody. Maybe he was feuding with somebody. But like I said earlier, he was outspoken, and he was a kind of larger-than-life character. So this goes into he wasn't being, he wasn't a meek individual. He wasn't a quiet guy. He didn't fly under the radar. Everybody knew who he was, and he wasn't afraid to argue and fight with people. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. Another tidbit of information that I discovered was that back in the 70s, David was convicted of growing marijuana. Ooh, scary marijuana. Well, back in the 70s, it was a felony. So David was barred from owning firearms for life. So it was not only, I know a lot of gun control advocates like to say it's really easy to get a gun in the United States and that he could just buy it on the internet and, just whatever. That's not really the case, and I'm not going to get too political on this, but David wasn't known to have a gun, registered or not, and he wasn't really a gun guy. He was a fisherman. So we're kind of on a fishing expedition for evidence in this case, and we know that detectives have been working basically every single lead that they could come up with early on in the case and throughout the last, 12 years. They have been looking into anybody and everybody, and they've combed through the wreckage. I know they saved a lot of the a lot of the evidence, well, whatever wasn't burned up in the fire, and we're not privy to all of the things that they discovered. I know that in cases like this, in most murder cases, there's what they called holdbacks. So there's pieces of information that are not made public because these are things that could lead to being able to verify somebody's confession. These are things, these are pieces of information, these are clues that the police find are very important in solving the crime, but until they have a suspect to connect the dots with, they don't want to release this information so that they can rule somebody out from a false confession. It is important to note that there has never been a suspect named in this case. The investigators have basically never been able to even name a person of interest in this case. That is how little evidence they have, which leads me to believe this is probably an acquaintance murder or maybe even a stranger murder. Somebody that David may have met once, maybe didn't really know them at all, maybe not even really an acquaintance. Or it could be a homicidal maniac. His son Casey has said in a newspaper article from, I think, 3 or 4 years ago that this is something that has weighed on their whole family, understandably, for the last, 12, almost 13 years. And this is something that worries them, that the murder is still out there. And as I was saying earlier, there are a number of other unsolved homicides in the area that have a very similar MO. So do we have a murderer that goes around shooting people to death in the head in their homes and then burning them up to conceal evidence and is so far successful in eluding apprehension or even being recognized as a murderous villain? And I don't like to go into conspiracy theories too much, but it is a distinct possibility that one or more of these murders is connected together. And we could have somebody who is maybe local to the area, or maybe has moved on from here and then moved back, who has committed very similar crimes elsewhere. We see this over and over with serial killers, that they will actually go out and commit the same crimes in neighboring states and elude law enforcement for many years. And could this be the case? I definitely think that's a possibility. Is it likely that this is a one-time murder and that the person or persons responsible for killing David did it this once, burned down his house, maybe burned down the other cabin, and then kind of stopped and got what they wanted by murdering David? That's a possibility too, but I really don't think so. I think there's something else here that maybe another case holds the clues that will lead to the conviction of the murder of David. And remember how I mentioned that another man was murdered on the same day here in Medford? A homeless man named Troy Dean Carney was shot in the head in his sleeping bag the exact same day. Curious, is there a link? Were bullets from both Troy and David recovered? Do they match? Are they the same caliber? I still don't know if they recovered any bullet from the crime scene at David's home. We do know he was shot in the head, but that's the only information we've been given by law enforcement. So I don't know if they recovered a bullet. Sometimes bullets travel through walls. Sometimes they end up very far away from a crime scene. And sometimes they end up still inside the victim's body. Sometimes they end up in a piece of furniture. And like I said, the house being burned, it makes it really hard to uncover or recover bullets and other pertinent pieces of evidence while doing an investigation. I just think it's definitely deepens the mystery to have two people murdered on the same day in almost the same way. I mean, you're not going to, well, I guess you could burn somebody up in their sleeping bag, but Troy didn't have a home to be burned up in. And are they connected? I don't know. I really don't know how to say that they are or that they aren't. But in my next episode, I'm going to talk about another person who was killed within a year of David in a very similar way, who is burned up in his residence in Medford after being stabbed to death, not shot. But, killers don't always use the same murder weapon each time. And there's actually another murder, very, very similar, where an older lady was shot to death and burned up in her home here in Jackson County, kind of recently also. And I'm not going to really talk about that case right now because I'm going to keep this episode short. I don't really like to go on much more than about 20, 30 minutes on a single case. And when I'm giving updates or doing multiple cases, maybe I'll stretch it out to about 40 minutes. And that's about it. I really appreciate everybody listening to Death Mysteries, all 20 people. Yeah, I get the analytics back from Spotify, and I average about 20, 30 listeners. So please tell your friends if you like what you hear here. If you have anything that can help me out, feedback about how I'm doing, if you have a case that you want me to cover, feel free to reach out to me at deathmysteriespodcast@gmail.com. You know, shoot me a message on Facebook. I'm still, you know, episode 7. I'm still getting used to this. I would really like a co-host. If you want to co-host this show with me and you want to come and sit in my basement with me at midnight and talk about people who got murdered and missing people, you want to get creeped out, hey, by all means, shoot me a message. We'll make it happen. Happy Halloween.